Welcome to Fermen Radio. I am your host Aga Pokrywka, and my guest today is Christina Stadelbauer. Christina is an Austrian-born artist and researcher with Italian roots and Finnish connections. She works in various places and disciplines in order to develop her research around non-human agencies, collective intelligence, interspecies communication, and the relationship between culture and nature. She is inspired by the space between art and science, and her work pivots around life, animals, plants, and bacteria. She has launched several long-term initiatives, among them Kintsugi Transformations.
Yeah, my name is Christina Stadelbauer, and I have a background in chemistry. I studied chemistry in Austria and in the United States. And I did my PhD, but somehow I always felt that the laboratory is too much of an artificial environment. I always missed the interaction with the so-called real world. Although, of course, the lab is also a real world, but I wanted to be with people and I wanted to be, in connection somehow. And I always missed this in the lab. And this is why I never worked as a scientist, as a chemist.
That's very interesting that you started from it, because actually when I was preparing for this talk and I stalked you on internet and I found out there that you have PhD in chemistry, and however we know each other for some years, it kind of never surfaced in my mind. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. I'm totally going to ask you about it.
And it actually is... So first I finished my studies and then I was working for a few years, something different. And then I thought, okay, but I maybe find a way back into the scientific world and I could start a PhD. And then I did it at a different university of applied life sciences. And I did a PhD on biomonitoring. And I used teeth of people to see if the amalgam, so if the mercury that they used for the tooth fillings, if this would enter the body or not. And I was collaborating with the dental clinic in Vienna. And I actually met the patients, because I had, 6 or 7 patients who agreed that they would give their materials. And so I met them and I met the doctors, and suddenly it became much more applied than before, because before you had some stuff and it was totally disconnected from anything in life, you know. And suddenly with these people and with this other university, the medical university, it suddenly became much more what I wanted to do, actually. So my PhD I actually enjoyed doing.
And what was the result of this research?
Well, the result was that clearly this mercury goes into the system of into the blood system, because the teeth are not dead. I mean, they're not growing, and they look like very mineralized material, but actually they're like a bone. They are inside there alive, and they are connected to the blood circulation. So anything that you fill the tooth with also gets in touch with the blood circulation, and so some of it gets washed out and gets into your system. And then we published this, and then there was a huge... Because we wanted to continue. I wanted to continue along these lines and do more research. But then the funding was cut, of course, because it was against the understanding of the health system in Austria at that time, because it was the common way of doing things, you know, these black fields. And they didn't like the results, because they were advocating that everything is fine and safe and there is no danger of mercury in the system at all. And so the funding was simply cut and we couldn't continue.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think this happens very often. Huh? If you have results that are not pleasant for whoever gives you money, then it's finished and the result is being hidden and that's it. Yeah, but so my background is somehow in the lab, and the lab for me is a very known environment that I have spent many, many hours of my life already in. So now coming back to the lab after so many years is actually quite funny, because you know, my fascination is not the same as many artists who are fascinated with the bottles and the machines and the whiteness and the cleanliness of the lab. For me, this is all kind of very known and normal and not very interesting. So for me, it's much more interesting to really do this quite scientific work.
So basically you came back to the lab as an artist, or maybe you changed the hat in a way, or how do you see this?
Yeah, I mean, I came back as an artist, which also allowed me to ask questions in a much freer way. I didn't have to ask them scientifically. I could play with them much more. Because as a scientist, you're always caught in this, you know, professionality. You have to be professional. You have to think of what is possible and what is impossible. But this kind of restricts you also. So coming back to the lab as an artist allowed me to be, in my thinking, much more creative and much freer.
So when you came back to the lab, what you were working on in this hat of an artist?
Actually, yeah. What I started with was kintsugi in the classic form, which is a Japanese technique to fix ceramics with gold and silver. And I was fascinated with this method because I like repairing in general. I like to, yeah, give a second life to objects that are broken or that are not functioning anymore. And also I like this focus on the so-called imperfection, which is the philosophy behind kintsugi. So it's about seeing the fault, not as a fault or as the imperfection, but to see this as the special, unique aspect of the ceramics. So the crack becomes actually the artistic aspect of this piece. And so I started doing this kintsugi, the classic form. But then I thought, actually, for me, because you're fixing, but at the same time, you're giving a second life to this piece, and you're spending so much time with it that you, because kintsugi is very tedious. Huh? You have to sand it, and you have to put another layer of it, of lacquer on it, and then you have to sand it. You spend many, many hours with very small, small alterations. So you start being very connected to this object. And then I thought, okay, but this is actually like a healing process. It's like, it's not fixing an inanimate piece of clay, but it became something where, yeah, you energetically bond to this piece and you somehow, yeah, there's something that is transmitted, some life force that becomes transmitted somehow. And then I thought that for me, it's similar to the healing process where the scar is renewing your skin. And this is how I came up with this idea of maybe trying to fix something with bacteria. And this brought me back to the lab.
Can you tell more about it, about the whole process, how to heal like inanimate objects with actually alive, like a micro living things?
In the 90s, I did, I became a shiatsu practitioner. So I did the education to do shiatsu. And then I did a lot of shiatsu. And I don't know if, yeah, you know shiatsu because it's this healing massage. And the philosophy behind shiatsu for me is very similar to kintsugi because, again, you are trying to not look at the part of the body that is sick, but you're trying to look at the entire thing and to energetically shift the system in a way that it can heal itself. And of course, in shiatsu, you're working with people and they are very much alive. And in kintsugi, you're working with objects. But somehow for me, there is a connection in this because, again, you're trying to not look at the sick part, at the fault, at the mistake, but you're trying to see the entire thing. You're trying to see the system and to change the energy somehow or to shift something that the energy can change by itself. And there is something that is transmitted through the hands, both in shiatsu and in this kintsugi, because it's really very, how can I say, if you touch something with your hand, you feel every little imperfection. I mean, if you touch a paper with writing, you might even be able to feel the writing. So your hands, if they are trained, I think they are very, very, Yeah, they can perceive very small irregularities. And I think in shiatsu, you use your hands to perceive what is going on under the skin. And with kintsugi, you use your hands to make this crack again becoming part of the surface. Because at the end, if a kintsugi piece is well done, at the end, you shouldn't be able to feel anything with your hands. So it should be really kind of the surface should become one piece again. And so somehow in this work with my hands, I think, yeah, I already explored these aspects many, many years before I even knew that kintsugi existed. But for me, there is a connection between this shiatsu work and this craft.
Yeah, definitely. I guess it's also about the process, right? Because if you glue two parts together, or if we would compare it to like a healing process, which would be probably some like aggressive medicine.
Yes.
It's something very else than healing or the process of like balancing things.
Yeah, definitely. And indeed, it's also difficult to say when something is finished, both in shiatsu and in kintsugi, because the process and things change, and maybe it's never finished. Or what does finished, or what does fixed then mean? So there is something that keeps it open-ended also, because you step into the next phase. And of course, I mean, with kintsugi at some point, yeah, the piece is done, and then I start using it again. But then maybe something cracks again, or maybe, yeah. So in a way, there is this aspect of process that doesn't look to the end. It doesn't look to some end situation that has to be achieved.
When I saw your work related to like kintsugi and healing, the title of the exhibition was Narratives of Imperfection. And it also makes me think that it's kind of maybe you're retelling a story or telling it in a very different way. Because I think the story, in a mainstream way we tell ourselves, is much more focused like on the result, on ending something, on some gratification at the end. And here you tell the story of like this process and some perfection, which will kind of never come, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And for me, the word narrative also holds this. A narrative for me is something that appears and then it disappears again. I mean, there is no beginning or end to a narrative. It's not like a fairy tale where you start with once upon a time and at the end everybody was happy for the rest of their lives. So for me, a narrative has something of kind of you dive into it and then you stay with it and then you dive out of it. But there is no clear beginning or clear end. And for me, life in general is a bit like this. You encounter and you kind of walk a bit of path together and then you separate again. So I think this kintsugi work for me has very much to do with how I see life in general. And indeed, it's full of processes that are never finished, never perfect, never maybe following what we expect or plan. So it has something very, and in this we come back to why are these inanimate objects suddenly alive? I think it's this, that they become part of your practice for a while and then they leave you again and maybe they stand back in a shelf or you give them back to whoever they belong. But there is no beginning and no end. And you also never know how it's going to look like. If you fix something with kintsugi in the beginning, you don't know how it's going to look like. So there is this, unpredictability somehow that I think life anyways brings. But very often we try to not acknowledge this. We try to make plans and to, disrespect this life force that creates this unpredictability.
I'm curious about like details of your like a pragmatic details of your work with this kintsugi and healing broken ceramics with living things. How does it work?
Well, I mean, work is a big word here, because when I started it, I just wanted to see if it would be possible to grow bacteria on ceramic, which is a very slick and difficult surface, because it's almost like glass. Huh? It doesn't absorb anything. It's a very dead material, actually. So I was curious to see if I could make bacteria grow along a crack, if I could feed them in a way and apply them in a way that they would grow along this crack. And when I first started, of course, it all didn't work out, and I first had to find ways of keeping them alive also for a longer time so that they would actually grow, because this material is so unfriendly to them. And so the idea at first was not necessarily to glue the crack back together, but to just have bacteria grow on it. So it was kind of a fake thing. And then I chose bacteria that you could see easily. This is this purple bacteria that I used, Yantinobacterium lividum. And then I found a red one, Serratia mazarensis. So I tried to find stuff that you would see easily on this white, on a white cup, for example. And so the first experiments were very much about aesthetics, I would say. And also in the exhibition, there were the Virgin Mary was there and these white cups, and they were all fixed with these colorful bacteria that have a story behind them. So there is some sort of conceptual narrative behind it. But actually, it's not gluing anything. So after the exhibition, you just take these pieces apart again, because nothing is glued. But along the way, I started to think about possibilities of really gluing stuff with bacteria. And actually, in Biophilia, at Aalto University, with James, who is the technician there, we figured out a genetically manipulated bacteria that could create epoxy. And epoxy is what is used in commercial glues. So if this process would work, maybe the bacteria could really glue ceramics. However, this is a very long process also, because it's genetically manipulated, so it also it's kind of a deeper research and also quite scientific. And then we ended up not having enough money, and so this project got stalled also. Yeah, I would really like to do that, and this would really kind of close a circle in my life, because this would then be more than just aesthetically playing with microbiology. It would really create some, I mean, if it works, huh? But if it works, it would really be scientific research on something that might have an application even. But it came through an artistic research process. And this is always what I find interesting in, you know, when you do this transdisciplinary work with art and science, very often it's said that, science cannot benefit. It's because the artists come and they want to do something impossible, and then science maybe can help, and it's more like a commodification. And then science can benefit because it gets exhibited. So, but very seldom people talk about the possibility that knowledge is actually created also through this artistic way of thinking. So if this really works with the epoxy, it would be, research and scientific knowledge that comes out of an artistic endeavor, but would then end up in a scientific application. So it would make me very happy.
Yeah, there is such a great value in just like free experimentation with like things from science and then bringing them back. Because I think in science, the ways of doing things are so restricted.
Yes.
That how you will find new things, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's called this blue sky research, which is kind of wildly experimenting and trying things out that are new and that are not necessarily focused on an application or on a result that can be then sold or used in industry. And this blue sky research, I think, yeah, in former times at the university, this was a common strand of science. But nowadays, there's less and less money for this because it's all about creating something that can be sold. So indeed, I think it, yeah, it's a bit sad to say, but I think maybe it's necessary to invite the arts into the scientific community to allow again this wild thinking, because the science by itself is not able to do it anymore.
I think we live in times that there are so many needs and like a burning problems to be solved, that it sometimes brings this pressure of being pragmatic to me. It's kind of dangerous way of thinking. I mean, we can see in arts these days, like, you know, socially engaged arts or politically engaged arts. And I am not critical at all. I feel even associated to it. But then I also worry about it, that if we will make everything with this actually an end product or end result, so you're coming back to what we were talking before, then I am not sure if this is necessarily good.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it feeds into the capitalist system, or yeah, the system of efficiency and of functionality. And I think, yeah, it makes everything a little bit monodimensional if you're not allowed to creatively and wildly invent stuff. So I really think that because it became a bit fashionable also to have these, yeah, multidisciplinary working groups and things like that. But I think there is really a value in this, because otherwise it becomes too result focused. And I don't think this is how we want our life to be. Everything for results and everything for efficiency.
Maybe something which impacts us also is the way how research is being funded and how research is being evaluated, because it always focuses on the end result, right? Like if you got a grant or there is some sponsor to the like of the research, like how will you notify the funding body what you've done, right? It's like, yeah, I hang out here in the laboratory. I think it's probably not enough.
Absolutely. But, you know, I was thinking of this because often in the arts, it's about how many visitors come.
Exactly.
So it's about counting the audience. But now with Corona and with the new measures of, yeah, hygiene, maybe we have to rethink this concept also entirely. Because it cannot be anymore about how many people come, because they're just not allowed to enter the room anymore. So maybe this pandemic also allows us to rethink for the arts, how do we measure if something is successful, or how do we measure if something is worth doing?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we are at a moment in history where we can, where it's possible to rethink these things entirely if we don't get distracted.
Did you work, for example, with other strains of bacteria to glue your the ceramics? Like, I don't know, even not bacteria, but the yeast, or I know that mushrooms are being quite used to like grow to certain forms.
Yeah, there was one strand that I started, but then I didn't follow it up again because there was no funding, and then Corona came. But yeah, I would like to continue. There is something. So yeasts are a huge group of organisms, and there is something that is called flocculent yeast. And flocculent means that they kind of stick together. And this is interesting for brewers. So when you make beer, these flocculent strands are interesting for the brewers because, I don't remember, but I think after the fermentation, they kind of flock together, and then they are easy to filter out. And some of them stick really very much. And so the idea was to see if we could find a strand that would stick to the surface of the cup and we could be able to glue with this force. But as I said, I have the strands, but the experiments got a bit stuck also.
And when we stick things together, are they broken by mistake or you break them?
For the exhibition, most pieces I broke purposefully. So they were not broken. And I tried to break them in as few pieces as possible. Because, of course, the more pieces you have, the more difficult it is to put it back together. And there was this one object, the Virgin Mary. I found her on the flea market. And she was perfect. She had no flaw. And then I had to break her. And I felt, first of all, it was not easy because to break ceramics, you never know how it's going to come out. But secondly, I felt a bit blasphemic to break this Virgin Mary. And yeah, I'm not a very strong Catholic believer, but still I felt, hopefully she will forgive me. So, and then, yeah, luckily she broke into 3 or 4 quite large pieces that were then rather easy to put back together. But I did also in the lab some experiments with breaking, and especially my first trials, they went really bad. So pieces broke into 1,000 little splinters, and then you cannot put them back together, of course.
So you had to learn how to break things too.
Yes. And I found a quite good method by dropping from a certain height. I mean, depending on what cup this was, but some of them broke really well. And I went often to the flea markets or to the recycling centers to get new material and to, yeah, do my breaking experiments.
It makes me think of if I would like think of a human relationships. It's sometimes like if breaking a cup could equal a conflict with a person, then actually healing this relationship again often makes it like more precious or stronger.
Yeah, but I think it is like this also. I mean, if you have a scar, it kind of, many people think that you become more interesting also. Children love scars because they tell a story and they tell an adventure. So there is something in this imperfection that also makes it unique. And indeed, if you spend time in healing and repairing, it just becomes more precious. And I think you learn a lot by doing this. Even if you fix a cup with the classic kintsugi, I mean, you know the cup so well after this because you have touched it for hours in all kinds of directions and ways. And you know every little corner, every little surface, every little dirt that is on there because you have to spend so much time with trying to rearrange it, to repair it. So indeed, I think relationships are exactly the same.
Yeah, so I hope that this research can continue, and it sounds super exciting. I would love to see it happen with this with the epoxy almost bacteria.
Yes, I would be very happy, and I mean, I hope it can continue. I think it's a perfect multidisciplinary project because it really combines art and science. Yeah. Without making one of them the commodification of the other. So I think it's a really equal, respecting both disciplines equally.